Good evening, Truth Seekers. Malloy here on the Nova M Radio Network. Thanks for tuning in once again tonight. Tricked you again, huh? Stick around. We have way too much to try to get to tonight. The breaking story about McCain and the female lobbyist. Yawn. I don't know. It doesn't make that much difference to me. It should. I know it should. But New York Times has got the story out there tomorrow about McCain and female lobbyists had an affair or had an ongoing affair or what have you. McCain is issuing a nonspecific denial. He's denying other aspects of the story, but not denying flat out the story about the other woman. I don't like that sort of story. I don't know why. Every time a Republican gets busted for kiddie porn, of course, that's criminal, or gets busted for putting on a dress when, you know, putting on a black dress when the weather perfectly calls for a white dress. You know, that kind of stuff is kind of funny. It gets weird when it turns out that it's a Republican who has been actively working against people who would cross-dress or against people who happen to be gay. Then the story takes on a different element. But John McCain had an affair? Yeah, really? Okay. Now, a lot of commentators, of course, are all over the story. They're just saying, well, this reflects on his character. Okay, I'll tell you what, let's do it. Let's line up all the men in America, the married men who've had affairs, and shoot them. And all of a sudden, I think the population, the male population in this country would, what, Kathy, reduce by about, don't look at me like that, by about 55 or 60%. I just can't get all worked up about it, but I'll guarantee you this, McCain will have a stroke over the story. McCain will go out of his gourd. It's his nature. He gets very pissed off. He's got a very short fuse. A lot of us have that, but a lot of us that have that kind of attitude are not running for president and do not have our fingers on nuclear triggers and don't carry the football with all the nuclear bomb codes. So this may prove to be McCain's undoing. The religious right wackos now will just go ape dung over this. You know they will. It's just all too funny. The Michelle Obama thing, we want to get to that right away because this is an example of a real screwing by the national news media. And Kathy, I got to bring you in on this one. Kathy's been working on this. Apparently, there are three versions of Michelle Obama's comment, right?
It's really confusing, but yeah, there was the speech that she actually made in Milwaukee.
Where she said?
On Monday, and I got the source directly from C-SPAN, where she said, for the first time in my adult lifetime, I'm really proud of my country,
right.
Not just because Barack has done well, but because I think people are hungry for change.
Right.
Then the next day, on Tuesday, Fox News played the quote, but where you heard the word really proud of my country, it went, I'm proud of my country.
Now, that was Fox News Television took it out.
Television,
and it was a bad edit.
It was a crappy edit.
Okay.
Okay. Then Tuesday night, our own Alan Colmes.
Not mine. He's a
liberal
he
is.
No, he's like Ed Schultz.
Played
no.
the quote with the smoothest, slickest, sneakiest edit of all, where it just said, for the first time in my adult lifetime, I'm proud of my country.
Okay, so the Alan Colmes
edit
got the edit right.
Correct. I
Fox
mean,
News,
they made the smoothest
Fox
edit.
News got the edit wrong. Now, the fact is, she said both.
Now, to further complicate things, this was in Milwaukee. Now, there's no question that Fox News deliberately distorted what
right.
she said. No question. Somebody had to take that word out.
Right.
Okay, we'll play all three versions.
Right.
But then later the same day, she was in Madison. And I guess the Fox folks are just this lazy that they didn't get it.
Well, they're dumbasses,
but
too.
She actually left the word out herself when she was in Madison. And she said, for the first time in my adult lifetime, I'm proud of my country.
Okay, let's play out.
And left the really out. But it was her own, you know.
Right, right.
But Fox News didn't get that one, where they wouldn't have had to make any bad or good edits.
And that little bathroom floater, Alan Colmes, went with the Fox News Channel edited version, only he cleaned up the edit.
It was cleaned up
significantly.
And we can play all three.
Okay, let's do it. Let's play all three.
The first one is from C-SPAN, which is what she actually said in Milwaukee. The second one is the Fox News.
No, do them one at a time.
Okay.
All right, this is from Milwaukee. This is off C-SPAN.
Let me get it started.
Okay.
Sorry about that. For the first time in my adult lifetime, I'm really proud of my country. And okay. Not just because Barack has done well, but because I think people are hungry for change.
Okay, that's that pretty clear. For the first time in my life, I'm really proud of my country. Okay, now what
this
are you going to play?
From Fox News the next day.
Now, this is that quote on Fox News.
The next day.
Okay.
It's Michelle Obama who's making the waves. That's for something she said at a rally in Milwaukee yesterday. Take a listen.
For the first time in my adult lifetime, I'm really proud of my country.
Ah, you rotten bastard!
Barack has done well.
Play it again, play it again. Play that again. Listen to that bad edit.
It's Michelle Obama who's making the waves. That's for something she said at a rally in Milwaukee yesterday. Take a listen.
For the first time in my adult lifetime, I'm really proud of my country.
Oh!
And not just because Barack has done well.
Gum suckers. All right,
that's
now.
That's a bad edit.
That's a bad edit, but that's a bad network. And don't forget who Murdoch is backing, okay?
Now here comes our favorite liberal, Alan Colmes.
All right. Now wait. Stop it. This is from the same quote in Milwaukee where she had the word, I'm really proud of my country.
Yeah, and you can tell it's the exact same cadence,
except,
the same applause.
Except Alan's
the same
version is all cleaned up. Okay, go ahead.
Very smooth.
Here's what Michelle Obama said, and I'll play you what Cindy McCain said because the wives are going at it. Here's Michelle Obama, and this is what's apparently
you pig.
Driving everybody crazy. Let's listen to this.
For the first time in my adult lifetime, I'm proud of my country.
Ah!
And not just because Barack has done well, but because people are hungry
Alan
for change.
Alan Colmes, you little bathroom
floater. You hear
how
smooth that is?
If you're going to edit and corrupt somebody's audio, that's how you do it. Now, let's hear the one in Madison, Wisconsin. Now, you said this is the next day.
No, same day.
Same day.
And this is what's a little confusing. I mean, she had the same clothes on. It was a similar backdrop. So I don't know why they didn't just pull this audio, because Michelle Obama did legitimately say this in Madison later the same day. Here we go.
For the first time in my adult life, I am proud of my country because it feels like hope is finally
okay.
making a comeback.
All right. All right.
But you notice they didn't use that. They're going to say, oh, well, we just pulled it from Madison and fonted it as Milwaukee accidentally. No, because the words she said afterward are different.
Right.
In the original version, the one that she said in Milwaukee, she said, and not just because Barack has done well, but because I think people are hungry for change.
Uh-huh.
And this one she says,
for the first time in my adult life, I am proud of my country because it feels like hope is finally making a comeback.
Ah, yeah. Oh,
yeah,
aren't you just the little Sherlock Holmes?
Well, she didn't say the hope is making a comeback part in the edited version that Fox, clearly it wasn't. They said, my bad, we got the audio from Madison and said, no.
I hate these bastards, Kathy. I hate them with a depth and breadth and width that is just unspeakable. Every one of the pigs. Now, I saw a little bit of video today that's out on the web with that filthy half-human Bill Kristol on Fox, just going on and on and on about Michelle Obama. Somebody ought to put Bill Kristol out of his misery. And by that, I mean just dose him real good with a whole lot of purgative or X-lax or something, because he's so full of it that he needs to sit on a toilet for about half an hour. You can just look at him, and you can see the whites of his eyes are brown. He really does need just a huge, huge dose of Epsom salts or something. Oh, I hate these people. Oh, my God. They just can't stand the fact that Hillary Clinton is not going to be the nominee of the Democratic Party. And now they're going to scream about the fact that John McCain is not going to be the president. Which leaves whom? We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy.
Oh, my name is Joe.
Day Screaming with Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. Now, right before the show, Steve sent me a link to a story on MSNBC and .com, and the story was unilateral strike called a model for U.S. operations in Pakistan, and the story is about we've already bombed in Pakistan. And if you go to the MSNBC website where the story was, it's gone, and it says, "Sorry, this story is no longer here." And of course, it was just posted yesterday, but it gives you a link to the Washington Post. It says you may find the story here. So we went to the Washington Post, and surprise, surprise, the story's gone. And if you do an on-site search of the Washington Post with the title "Unilateral Strike Called a Model for U.S. Operations in Pakistan," it doesn't come up, no matter how many years you go back in the Washington Post. But CommonDreams.org had grabbed the story yesterday and put it on their website, which is, surprise, surprise, where you'll find it. CommonDreams.org, story in the Washington Post yesterday. The title is, or the headline is, "Unilateral Strike Called a Model for U.S. Operations in Pakistan." And what it says is this: in the pre-dawn hours of January 29th, a CIA, that's just, you know, last month, a CIA Predator aircraft flew in a slow arc over the Pakistani town of Mir Ali. The drone's operator, relying on information secretly passed to the CIA by local informants, clicked a computer mouse and sent the first of two Hellfire missiles hurtling towards a cluster of mud brick buildings a few miles from the town center. The missiles killed Abu Laith Alibi, a senior al-Qaeda commander and a man who had repeatedly eluded the CIA's dragnet. It was the first successful strike against al-Qaeda's core leadership in 2 years, and it involved, U.S. officials say, an unusual degree of autonomy by the CIA inside Pakistan. Now, you know what that sentence means. It means the CIA is operating and going after people inside Pakistan without the knowledge of the Pakistani government. Now, you can make the argument, and Barack Obama has made this argument, that that's okay, because al-Qaeda, if we all believe the official story, are the ones who trained the 19 bombers that came to this country, yada, yada, yada. So if there's a way to take out the leadership, to murder the leadership, I hate that phrase, take out. Sounds like, you know, what you do with Chinese food, for Christ's sake. If there's a way to murder one of the al-Qaeda leaders, well, and you can't get the key to the borders from the country in which you want to commit the murder from that country's leader, well, screw it. Just cross the international border and kill them anyway. The article goes on, having requested the Pakistani government's official permission for such strikes on previous occasions, only to be put off or turned down, this time the U.S. spy agency, the CIA, did not seek approval. The government of Pakistani President Pervez Musharraf was notified only as the operation was underway, according to the officials, who insisted on anonymity because of diplomatic sensitivities. Officials say the incident was a model of how Washington often scores its rare victories these days in the fight against al-Qaeda inside Pakistan's national borders. To wit, it acts with assistance from well-paid sympathizers inside the country, but without getting the government's formal permission beforehand. Now, the article goes on. It's really a lengthy article. And if you want it, go to commondreams.org. And it's from yesterday. And the title is Unilateral Strike Called a Model for U.S. Operations in Pakistan. But what is now, of course, one could make the argument, too, and it's a valid argument, that it really doesn't matter about getting Pervez Musharraf's permission anymore, because he was almost had his ass thrown out of office the other day. His ruling party now controls 20 seats, or the former ruling party controls 20 seats in a, what, 260-seat parliament. So Pervez Musharraf's days are extremely numbered. I wouldn't be surprised if a car bomb gets him very quickly. But the odd part is, I I'm going to guess here, I'm going to guess that MSNBC and the Washington Post, when this article came out yesterday, got a quick call from the CIA that went something like this: "What in the hell are you people doing? Get that goddamn story off your website!" Oh, okay. And so it disappeared. along with the trail. Oh, good God. Now, you can also Google, you Google it. That's what I did. You can find the story by Googling the headline, Unilateral Strike Called a Model for U.S. Operations in Pakistan. But it would seem to me to be so typical of the CIA to go berserk, you know, just to go nuts on MSNBC and the Washington Post, thinking that those two websites are the only only places the story would appear. Once it's out there, CIA, and to the NSA who's listening to the program every night, hi guys, once a story is out on the net, let me tell you something, you dumbasses, it metastasizes. It's like cancer cells. It's all over the place! The fact that MSNBC and the Washington Post both pulled the story, though, speaks volumes, don't you think?
Take great comfort in knowing that they don't know what they're talking about, because history takes a long time for it to reach, and there's no such thing as short-term history.
Poor miserable little geek. Now, we have one more thing that we want to share with you where it concerns the Michelle Obama story, and of course, I think this is a clear indication that things are going to get rough for Barack Obama. Fox News is already going into the racial aspects. I'm surprised. What we're going to play for you is what Bill O'Reilly said. Was it last night or tonight? Was it? It was either last night or tonight. I'm surprised O'Reilly doesn't try to slip the N-word in when he's talking about this couple. But I want you to hear what O'Reilly said regarding the Michelle Obama statement about, for the first time in her life, really being proud to be an American.
And I don't want to go on a lynching party against Michelle Obama.
A what?
There's evidence, hard facts, that say this is how the woman really feels.
Oh my
God. If that's how she really feels, that America's a bad country or a flawed nation, whatever, then that's legit.
It's legit to go on a lynching party. Start that again.
And I don't want to go on a lynching party against Michelle Obama unless there's evidence, hard facts, that say this is how the woman really feels.
Oh, I see. Okay, cut it. So Bill O'Reilly would be okay with joining a lynching party if this is how Michelle Obama feels. In other words, if her opinion is that for the first time in her life she's proud or really proud, it doesn't make any difference if it has a modifier. This piece of human white waste, O'Reilly on Fox News, is ready to lead a lynching party against this black woman. Think about it for a moment, truth seeker. Think about what the son of a bitch said. And I want to play it one more time, because I want you to hear what this pig said.
And I don't want to go on a lynching party against Michelle Obama unless there's evidence, hard facts, that say this is how the woman really feels.
Oh, my God. This is how bad it's going to be for the Obamas.
Didn't Bush give a speech on Black History Week or something a few weeks ago that says we need to stop talking about nooses? There need to be no more nooses?
Yeah, but Bill O'Reilly is Bill O'Reilly makes me, he's one of the white men who make me hang my head in shame for being a white male, or I'm not white, a Caucasian male. Bill O'Reilly, the pig man Limbaugh, the pissant Sean Hannity, the totally insane California freak Michael Savage, all of these people, these white men, just make me ashamed. It makes me want to go to the basement and stay there for a week. And just, you know, or when I go outside, pull a hat down and a scarf over my face and turn my collar up, not let people see that I'm a white male. It's that bad. It's that bad. So if Michelle Obama really feels for the first time in her life that she's proud to be an American, this filthy pig O'Reilly will join a lynching party to hang, what's he going to say, hang the Negress? It's incredible. It's incredible. Now, sadly, this is the argument that not a few Hillary Clinton supporters are making. That they have thrown every piece of human waste at Bill and Hillary Clinton they possibly can, and unless it was on their policies, none of it stuck. And I say their policies because Hillary Clinton is claiming, you know, all this experience. The policies of Bill Clinton were part and parcel to the disaster, the economic meltdown that we're in now because of NAFTA and GATT and I don't even want to get into it. But sadly, the argument from an awful lot of Hillary Clinton supporters, including people that I consider to be friends. Malloy, listen, the Obamas are not going to be able to handle it. The slime machine, the filth, the pigs, the white people, the Caucasians in this country who are beneath rat droppings are going to put millions into destroying this young black couple. They're going to destroy them. They can't do it to Hillary because Hillary Clinton has survived every conceivable attack, including those on her marriage by her own goddamn worthless, cheating husband. Now, if that's a reason to support somebody in this day of politics in this country, and it may well be, then we've really sunk down among the sump and the sewage and the stuff that we don't like to talk about. You have a young couple here, Barack and Michelle Obama, who are right on the cusp of becoming President and First Lady of the United States. And the only thing a filthy subhuman like O'Reilly can attack them on is their race. And the other night, what was that screenshot the other night on CNN when Anderson Cooper had his little 360 program, and what do you call that, Kathy? Not the scroll, where the scroll's on the bottom.
It was the closed caption.
The closed captioning. And it said, now, I don't know who does the closed captioning. It may be some independent source from CNN. But it said Barack Obama had received a congratulatory phone call from Al-Qaeda. And has anyone said anything about that? Has anyone said, oops, we made a mistake?
Yeah, because you know when you're typing, Hillary and Al-Qaeda are like exactly the
exactly,
same thing.
Yeah, you hit the same keys. And how many times has Fox News put John McCain up with a D after his name, Senator as Arizona D for Democrat. You know, it's going to be rough. It's going to be bad. It's going to be hideous.
And we're going to be right here to call him on it every time.
Do the O'Reilly thing one more time, because I want people to be aware of this. I don't know why, you know, I watched a little bit of Keith Olbermann tonight, and I didn't hear him mention it. Usually he's on Bill O'Reilly like a stink on poop, and I didn't hear him mention this. Maybe it'll come up tomorrow night, but listen to O'Reilly
again.
And I
don't want to go on a lynching party against Michelle Obama unless there's evidence, hard facts that say this is how the woman really feels.
Okay. Now, if they got rid of Don Imus for talking about those some nappy-headed hoes, isn't it time to get rid of O'Reilly for this kind of racist lynching? This is murder. This is what black people have been putting up with in this country for 350 years. Oh, the Negro got in your way? Give me the son of a bitch. Let me hang him. Let me lynch him. And what O'Reilly is saying is, I don't want to go on a lynching party for Michelle Obama unless this is the way she really feels. God damn! Do you understand what this man just said? He wants to lynch the person who will probably be the next First Lady of the United States. Now, how long is it going to take for every decent person in this country to send an email to Fox News and demand this son of a bitch be run off the network? Or better yet, notify every single advertiser. If I were a black American right now, I would be twice as pissed as I am being a Caucasian American. How many of you people listening tonight are going to sit on your asses and let this pass? How many of you? He is willing to lynch Michelle Obama if she really feels that for the first time in her life, she's proud to be an American. Son of a bitch. You better jump in here. I'm about to bust a gut.
Well, probably the same number of people will protest that protested Glenn Beck when he said that he could strangle Michael Moore with his own hands.
Glenn Beck is a twit. Glenn Beck couldn't strangle a bag of potato chips. And, you know, one white man attacking another white man verbally on a TV show is one thing. But when you have a history in this country, as we do, remember the photographs over here, the photograph archive at Emory University. It was on display. I think it's traveling around the country. Not unlike the Holocaust exhibits that travel around the country. This is about the lynching of black Americans over the past 300 years, 200, well, however long they had cameras, not 300 years. That's how long the history is. But these are pictures from around the turn of the last century up until the 50s. Picture after picture after picture of black men and sometimes black women hanging from trees, and not just here in the South, although that's where probably 95% of these photographs were taken. And O'Reilly goes on the air and says, I don't want to go on a lynching party for Michelle Obama unless she really said what she said. Son of a bitch.
The lynching of Henshin. He hid in the darkest apartment of Glum. He practiced placating the meek and the dumb. Sat stone-faced and picking his teeth with his tongue. He swore never to mention the lynching of Henshin about the...
Because life's too short to listen to right-wing radio, it's more of Mike Malloy.
It's about 10 before the hour. Okay, thanks to everybody who informed me that Keith Olbermann did, in fact, cover the lynching Bill O'Reilly story tonight, along with Gene Robinson, columnist for the Washington Post. He should be fired. He should never, ever, ever be allowed near a television camera again, but that's not what Fox News is about. Fox News is about supporting Hillary Clinton and keeping people of color completely out of positions of power, totally and completely. Murdoch is known for that, whether it was his empire in Australia or the UK or the United States, it doesn't make any difference. He is a racist Nazi son of a bitch, and it was his boy, Bill O'Reilly, who made the statement. If O'Reilly's on the air tomorrow... If O'Reilly is on the air within the next 2 days, it may take 2 days to fire him. But if NBC, if General Electric, whoever the hell it was, can get rid of Don Imus for his racist remark, then by God, they better get rid of Bill O'Reilly. And I'm not defending Imus. I'm just saying there better not be a double standard here at all. Imus had 10 times the audience of this pig O'Reilly. So O'Reilly the pig needs to go. He just needs to go. Oh, and by the way, if you look outside right now, quick, it's almost a full eclipse. It may be. We have these huge windows here in the studio where we can look up through the woods, through the trees. Take a quick look, Kathy. Just take a quick look. Just right over there. And we're going to have a on-the-spot review. Of course, you can go look for yourself. Just look out the window. Look outside in the I guess it would be kind of the southeastern sky. Still a little sliver left. Yeah. And as our writer in residence says, you know, just a reminder, for God's sake, of the little reminder of the natural world. There's more to all this than racist pig statements by O'Reilly and attacks on Michelle and Barack Obama. Good time to remember, Bridget writes, the magic of the natural universe. Yeah. So if you're near a window, take a look outside. PBS sent this in regarding McCain's mistress. She writes, I agree. I don't care if McCain got a little on the side. I do note that his mistress has the same weird eyes as his wife. Because her plastic surgeon pulled her face too tight. What an odd fetish. Oh, God. I just wish when these politicians and people, when they had their affairs, in the first place, I just can't for the life of me envision some of these people having sexual relations with anything. A member of the same sex, the opposite sex, a fire plug. I can't do it. If I start thinking about McCain naked, having sex with anybody, my mind starts to reel. And I just think, oh, Jesus, quick, grab something. You're about to faint. And then this came from Dave in Carbondale, Illinois, who writes, Mike and Kathy are just listening to a podcast of Tuesday night's show. I had to respond immediately to your query about ad hominem. Remember last night I said, is that right? Is there, an ad feminem, or is it just all ad hominem? Because I forgot my Latin. And Dave writes, as a retired Latin teacher, I can assure you that there is no feminine counterpart to that expression, nor is one needed, since the noun homo means man in the sense of mankind and already includes all of our lovely ladies. The Latin noun for men, those among us bearing testicles, is vir, V-I-R, from which we get virile. And no, Kathy, your astute guess at changing the end to an A will not suffice here, as an A can never be applied to a third declension masculine noun. Well, you decline nouns and conjugate verbs, remember? You remember that. If you ever saw Monty Python's Life of Brian, you would understand why you should be glad that I'm not there to ruthlessly twist your ear. Pax vobiscum. To coin a phrase, P.S., to coin a phrase, your program is the sunshine in my life. Well, that's very kind. Thanks, Dave. So, pax vobiscum. I can remember one of the thrills of my life when I may have said this the other night when I took Latin was I could then read the front of a Pall Mall cigarette pack. It was just wonderful. George Bush, his poll numbers are now at 19%, according to the American Research Group Incorporated, the lowest in the history of the presidency. Bush's overall job approval rating is 19%. 78% of Americans say that the national economy is getting worse. 77% disapprove of the way Bush is handling anything. When it comes to the economy, only 14% approve of the way Bush is doing it. Among Americans registered to vote, 18% approve of the way Bush is handling his job as president, and 78% disapprove. Oh, in registered voters, when it comes to the way Bush is handling the economy, only 15% say Bush is doing a good or decent job. 79% disapprove. It goes on and on and on. The results are based on 1,100 completed telephone interviews conducted among a nationwide random sample of adults 18 years and older. The interviews were conducted February 16th through the 19th, 2008. The theoretical margin of error for the total sample is plus or minus 2.6 percentage points. 19% approval rating, huh? I wonder why it's so high. I'm serious. I wonder why it's so high. We got a break here, don't we? Yeah, all right. Well, we'll take a break and come back and maybe take a few phone calls and continue with the fun and frivolity on the Molloy program tonight on Nova M. And by the way, I got an email from the boss today that there, I think as of noon today, there were still 50 tickets left for this gig Saturday night with Scott Ritter and me. If you really want to come, and I hope you do, go to 1480kphx.com. And get a ticket, because if there's any left. Love to see you. We'll be right back. I'm Mike Molloy. This is Nova M Radio.
There is no dark side of the moon. Matter of fact, it's all dark.
I thought we would throw that in. It is eclipse night. Full eclipse of the moon here in the northern hemisphere. And this is not another one for what, Kathy? 2 years? Is that what I've heard? 2010? I've gotten a couple of emails from reliable sources here. Stan is among them. That the Washington Post, you can access that story now about the strike in Pakistan by the CIA without notifying Pervez Musharraf. Apparently, the story is back up. But take my word for it. It was down, and it wasn't like I typed in the wrong exact URL. Because when I went to the page, the headline was still there on the Washington Post website, and it said the story you're looking for has been removed, or whatever it normally says. MSNBC said the same thing and said you can try the Washington Post. So apparently it has been reposted. Now, whether that was just an online glitch and the Washington Post meant no harm, didn't try to cover up the news, okay, that's fine. That's good to know. But there was a period early this evening when it was gone. It was not there, and which immediately makes me start screaming and frothing at the mouth. AJ, the Music Factory, regarding what Bill O'Reilly said about Michelle Obama leading a lynching party, if this is how she really feels, son of a bitch, I can't get that out of my head. AJ, the Music Factory, writes, "Hey, Mike. Blank," writing to Fox News, "how about the police? This blanker just made a blank blank threat." That's true. That's a threat on her life. I mean, can you use the television medium now to make a threat on people's lives? Can you do it? Lynching is murder. And he made it very clear that he would join a lynching party if Michelle Obama really meant this is the first time in her life she felt proud to be an American. There is something you can do. Susan writes in, contact the FCC. Just go to FCC.gov and then find the complaints page, FCC.gov, and file the complaint. not that the Nazi-owned FCC will necessarily do anything unless there's enough complaints. But in addition to Fox Noise, go to FCC.gov and find the complaint section and file a complaint. Why not? Why not? Bob Kincaid has a website, headonradio.com. I'm sure you all have heard me talk about it. Head on, like in head-on collision, headonradio.com. He writes, Mike, remember last week, dear leader told us that, quote, the era of rampant lynching is over, end quote. So O'Reilly can lynch Michelle Obama as long as he doesn't get rampant about it. Oh, God. Bob writes, I swear before this long tortured presidential political process plays out, one of these right-wing babbleheads will spontaneously combust and use the N-word. Of course, it won't cost them their job. Remember Snowball in Orwell's Animal Farm, who said, quote, all pigs are equal, but some pigs are more equal than other pigs, end quote. Turns out that book wasn't an allegory about communism. Orwell was prophesying about right-wing hate radio. Bob. What? He's on hold? Oh, really? No, this is a different Bob. We'll put him back on. This is Bob at superbeans.com. I thought you were Bob Kincaid at headonradio.com. Hell, maybe you are. Maybe you have all sorts of weird lives in addition to being the importer of great coffee. Hi, Bob.
No, I only have three lives going at the moment, but not that one.
I see.
I gave up smoking this morning.
Well, wait a second. Let me interrupt the program and get that out to everybody. Listen, breaking news. Did you really? Good for you. Good for you. I'm proud of you.
So if you see a glow in the Pacific Northwest, they didn't shoot down the satellite. It was me. My head exploded because I planned a perfectly low-key day.
Yeah.
You know, make some cookies, take little boy to the park.
Right.
And I was doing just fine.
Yeah,
which is what all people say right before they go straight to the edge. And I read the Bill O'Reilly thing, and I'm looking into the abyss, and I'm thinking, I'm fine. And then when I saw the edited Michelle Obama tape, it was just like, goodbye.
Yeah, right.
It was just, okay, take a deep breath. And this goes to the very core of how we know stuff. If they start snipping the news like that and fobbing it off,
yeah.
1984 was, what, 24 years ago? No, it's right now.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think there should be this huge, I'm speaking in hyperbole, there should be this huge outcry. And who's the guy at Fox that did the edit? What's his name? Who told him to do that? And to finally expose this, because if this swift voting continues, then... you know, it's how we know stuff. If they start fooling around with that, then we're all down the memory hole.
Well, you know what was just utterly bizarre to me, and the guy's name at Fox News who did the first edit for Fox Television is probably Jerky Boy Brittle Goose or something, because that was the worst edit I think I've ever heard. By the time, Alan Combs came on that night, they had cleaned up the cut. And it flowed very smoothly. That's what Kathy played, and it's exact same cut. Now, do we climb up Alan Combs' backside for this? Well, hell yeah, it's his program. I know what's going on this program. Of course, my producer would never, because I happen to be married to her, would never take an edit like that and give it to me and say, here's Michelle Obama. It just wouldn't happen. But the fact that Alan Combs, this titular liberal on Fox News Radio or whatever the hell he's on, Fox Radio, I don't even know who syndicates him anymore. But to think that this little scum sucker who presents himself as a liberal and never has been, never will be, he's kind of like Ed Schultz, presents himself this way, and people, it just gives liberal talk on talk radio just such a rotten name when you have guys like this out here doing this.
Well, we knew they lied. But that was the third outrage. When I saw how badly they edited it, it's just like, God, you think I'm going to swallow that?
Right.
You know, and then it's just like, who's the guy that did that? Who told that guy to do that? And just start peeling it away and say, look, here's how they manipulate, stretch, distort news to stick it into people's heads so that they have bad... I have to edit myself.
I know. You do have to. You do have to.
Because this isn't a radio-friendly word that was banging around in my head.
No.
But, no, these people are well, I've lapsed into incoherency.
That's all right. Were you able to maintain the non-smoking effort?
Oh, absolutely, absolutely.
Oh, good. Well, the way I did it when I finally did quit 6 years ago was just I chewed a lot of Nicorette gum and wore the patch. And not at the same time. You know, my doctor said, don't do them at the same time. But I did the patch. I did the step down, the 21, the 14, the 7, and then the switch to gum. And what was amazing to me was really and truly, except for the first 2 days, how easy it really was to quit. And I felt like such a jackass for having smoked for enough years that I probably have all sorts of little oat cell cancers just waiting to spring up in my lungs. But so if you've decided to quit, good for you. I hope you make it. You can.
No, I've got pills and everything.
Yeah, well, good. Especially guys like you and me, or not guys like you, anybody who has kids, who has little kids. You can't do that. We can't do that to our kids.
That's the motivating factor. You know, I'm the outside smoker guy.
Yeah.
So I don't pollute the house. But then it's just like, you know, I would like to stick around to see him graduate from high school and beyond.
I hear you. Hey, listen, glad you called in, Bob.
Have fun.
If you get a chance, stick your head outside. I think the eclipse is full now, all right?
That's our next plan.
Okay. Take care.
Bye.
We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Molloy. This is Nova M Radio.
Of Mike Molloy.
Breaking on his brow. 21 past the hour. Remember, Bruce in New Jersey reminded me of this, Kathy. A couple of months ago, when O'Reilly's lead segment, he went off on me because of some twitchy little right wing blogger had let him know that I said somebody ought to what.
You said that you had violent fantasies.
Violent fantasies.
About Dana Perino.
About Dana Perino, right. And O'Reilly had on a former, he couldn't get a real one, he had a former FBI agent on. And he kept trying to get the woman to say that, yeah, that was terroristic threats and something should be done to me. And she wouldn't say it. Because, you know, to say that you sometimes have violent fantasies about Dana Perino, you're pretty much stating categorically that they're fantasies. I mean, hello? But now he goes on the air and says, play it again. I want people to hear it. I want to play this for the rest of my radio career. I want to play it all the time. Listen to this pig.
And I don't want to go on a lynching party against Michelle Obama unless there's evidence, hard facts, that say this is how the woman really feels.
Okay, there you go. He's got a qualifier on that anyone can figure out. I don't want to go on a lynching party against Michelle Obama unless this is the way she really feels. If that's not a terroristic threat, what is? What the hell is? He is threatening her life. If she really meant that she hasn't felt this good about America in a long time. Or ever, in her adult life, whatever the hell she said. It's almost no longer what Michelle Obama said, but what this filthy pig subhuman said on cable television so that all 200,000 of his listeners could hear it and talk about it. Here, O'Reilly, he went after that Negro last night, didn't he? Yeah, by God. O'Reilly ain't going to let them people get elected. Shoot, you kidding me? Do we still have that thing where O'Reilly went off on me? not that I care. I'm to hell with it, you know. Oh, Lord. How did we get to this point? I remember when I first started my radio career, well, it wasn't that long ago, about 22 years ago. Not that long ago at all. All right, 24, 20, yes, I don't know. But the first program I had where I was paid on a real radio station, WSB here in Atlanta, Cox Communications, big 50,000-watt behemoth that covered the eastern half of the United States. The first program I ever hosted was called Sound Off. Isn't that quaint? Where people would call in and sound off about how they felt about certain things. You know, well, the highways out here aren't very good. Well, you know what? I don't like people that criticize President Reagan. And I had to be very careful about what I said. I had to make sure everything was in perfect balance. Of course, this was during the Fairness Doctrine and before consolidation and so on and so forth. Albert in Orlando writes, Mike, I'm watching the lunar eclipse, almost total at this point. He sent this about 20 minutes ago. And can't help wondering if there is some astrological portent in an eclipse during the year of a presidential election. As the dark shadow slowly envelops the pale moon, I notice that it is tinged with red. I hope my fears will not be realized. Albert in Orlando. Well, I don't know anymore. Maybe there is something there. This is from votolatino.org blog site. Blog.votolatino.org, the official Vote Latino 2008 blog. This is about Clinton, Obama, and cluster bombs. And this was at the Huffington Post. David Reese. We've talked about cluster bombs many times in this program. I read something the other day. 60%, or is it 40%? Oh, gee. 60% or 40% of all injuries and deaths from cluster bombs are children. Children. It says, cluster bombs and landmines are particularly terrifying weapons that wreak havoc on communities trying to recover from war. They are fatal impediments to reconstruction and rehabilitation of agricultural land. They destroy valuable livestock. They disable otherwise productive members of society. They maim or kill children trying to salvage these bombs for scrap metal. Senator Obama of Illinois voted in favor of the ban against cluster bombs and landmines. Senator Clinton of New York voted against the ban. And the person who sent this to me writes, I'm not a single-issue voter, but as Obama and Clinton share many policy positions, this vote, which was in the fall of 2006, was revelatory for me. After all, Amendment number 4882 is an easy one to vote against. One decided her vote according to political calculation. The other used a moral calculation. Yeah, we've talked about that before, too, that Hillary Clinton is in favor of the continued use of landmines and cluster bombs. I have pretty much made up my mind about the presidential race. And if you want to know what a President McCain's foreign policy would be, well, we'll cover that. Maybe not tonight, but we'll get to that. Stay with us. I'm Mike Molloy. This is Nova M.
Country of deep compassion. We care. One of the great things about America, one of the beauties of our country, is that when we see a young, innocent child blown up by an IED, we cry.
That's what's beautiful about our country, huh? You sick son of a bitch. Peter in Phoenix says, the Secret Service protects the Obamas, so is Billo now a national security threat? Well, you could make that argument. I really think that he should be arrested and charged with terroristic threats, a terroristic threat against another person, regardless of the fact that she is the wife of a United States senator and will probably soon be the First Lady of the United States. If that son of a bitch said that about me, the next thing I would do would be at the police station swearing out a warrant, or wherever you go. Where do you go to swear out warrants, Kat? I've never sworn out a warrant. I guess I go to the police station and take out a warrant. Or you go to court? I don't know. I have no idea.
What? Are you talking about my ex-boyfriends again?
Oh, yeah. God, you had so many of them you had to lock up. Just one, right? The story we've been hearing about the shoot down of this school bus size satellite that is never did get into orbit properly and now is tumbling and turning and heading back to Earth. And is it the Air Force that wants to knock it down so they can, you know, play with some of their new toys? Don't believe for a minute that whoever's in charge here, who's in charge, Defense Department, Air Force, that they're concerned about the toxic materials on board that satellite. They couldn't care less about the toxic material. You see, do you remember a few months back when the Chinese did exactly this? They had a communication satellite in orbit, and they decided to shoot it down. And the U.S. Government went berserk. The Bush crime family almost lost their lunch that this was a provocative move because, well, for obvious reasons, it showed the stuff that the Chinese have in terms of being able to shoot a satellite out of orbit. Uh-oh. So in order to, say back at you, mofo, they have, you know, the U.S. Air Force or the Bush crime family has to come up with an act of equal flash and pizzazz. So, and fine, go for it. You know, I mean, that's what the game is all about, right? Mine is bigger than yours. That's always been what the game is about. But let's not get confused, even more confused than we already are. This is not about protecting the whales, you know, when this thing falls in the Pacific, all the toxic, or protecting some people in the Arizona deserts or downtown L.A. No, that's not what it's about at all. It's about responding to the Chinese. And it's probably also another test of this wonderful comic book, cartoonish SDI thing that has been floating around in the minds of right-wing nut jobs since Ronald Reagan, since about 1982, and also sucking up billions of dollars since that time. GM in Oregon, I was just outside watching lunar eclipse, and one of my favorite quotes came to mind. It was attributed to Ferdinand Magellan. The quote is, "The church says the earth is flat. I know the earth is round, for I have seen the shadow of the earth on the moon, and I have more faith in a shadow than in the church." Whoa! Ferdinand Magellan said that, really? I thought he was a good Catholic. Madeleine Albright, who sent this to me? Oh, Mike did. Okay. This is a little off the wall. I don't mean it's weird. I mean it's weird. It's not factually incorrect. But here's what Mike wrote today. Madeleine Albright, who's now a Hillary Clinton advisor, Madeleine Albright said, of the 500,000 children killed by Clinton during his sanctions against Iraq, it was worth the price. I remember that interview. I just about lost it. When she was asked, Madeleine Albright was asked point blank, 500,000 children have died as a result of these sanctions. Do you think it's worth it? And she hesitated and she said, yeah, I think it was. Mike goes on. The camp commander at Auschwitz claimed 3 million Jews were killed there, of which perhaps a sixth were children. In other words, 500,000, 500,000. Clinton's baby killing spree of 500,000 Iraqi babies or children is probably very comparable to the number of children killed by the Nazis at Auschwitz. Bush, the moron, has killed 1 million Iraqis. 5 to 6 million Jews were killed by the Nazis between 1935 and 1945. This is comparable in scope to Bush and Clinton. Clinton, responsible for 500,000 Iraqi children. Bush, the moron, over 1 million Iraqi civilians. Pappy Bush, Clinton, and Bush the village idiot probably killed getting onto a couple of million Iraqis. A record which shows how proficient U.S. presidents are in having Iraqis killed by proxy. And to make this an even grander achievement, Mike writes, their killings were only incidental to their imperial objectives. Any imperialist would be proud of that record of incidental killings. Signed, Mike. Yeah, we don't talk about that, do we? And that's the part I don't understand. That is such, it's almost an indelible moral stain. There is truly an indelible stain on Germany. It's going to be there for all of history. There's no way. The atrocities committed in the name of the German people by the duly elected government of Adolf Hitler, that stain, as a result of those atrocities, will never be removed. There's no condemnation here, certainly, of Germans born after 1945. How could there be? But the stain is there. It's going to remain there historically forever for the end of time. Why not the same thing applied to Pappy Bush, Bill Clinton, and George W.? Why not? These three men were responsible for mega death in Iraq for no reason whatsoever, not even the first invasion. Over the little oil fields in Kuwait, a little made-up country that used to be part of Iraq, a little made-up company, a country that didn't even exist until it was carved out of sand by the imperialist powers. So why not the same stain? Is it, you know, the German people are constantly erecting memorials to the innocence of all those people that were murdered by the Nazis. I've never traveled in Germany, but it's my understanding those memorials to the Jews are all over the place. And now there is a move to erect memorials to the Roma or the Gypsies, the homosexuals, all the people that the Nazis butchered and slaughtered. Are we going to erect monuments in this country to the 2 million Indochinese that we butchered in that part of the world? Are we going to erect any sort of memorial to the, pick a number, 500,000, 1 million, 1.5 million, 2 million Iraqis that we have incinerated for no reason at all except greed and an imperialistic attitude? Are we going to do that in this country? No, we're not. No, of course we're not. Because somehow, and I don't quite get this, we have convinced ourselves that we're the good guys. We're the good guys, and if we want to murder on a whole-scale basis, or a wholesale basis, we can do so. And it's okay. All we have to do when it's all over is erect a monument to our dead. And get, you know, get choked up when the flag goes by and you hear taps and you think, oh God, all those Americans who gave their lives for freedom. What Americans gave their lives for freedom since the end of World War II? Well, somebody tell me. Where and who? I'll wait. So it's a moral stain on this country that is, whether we acknowledge it or not, and we're never going to acknowledge it, not as a society. There are those among us who acknowledge it. But the way the Germans acknowledge the horror that they perpetrated, now, granted, the Germans were responsible with their activities for the deaths of maybe 50, 60 million people. More than that, if you count both world wars. And World War II was just Act Two of World War I. So there is that. But what the United States has done under both Democratic and Republican presidents since the end of World War II and the beginning of the Cold War, from overthrowing governments to having leaders assassinated to invading countries to carpet bombing to Agent Orange to poisons to defoliants that resulted 10, 15 years later in children being born with no heads, no feet, no hearts. their livers hanging from the outsides of their backs. Jesus, God. But we don't talk about it. We don't acknowledge it. But Madeleine Albright, who, if Hillary Clinton is elected, will have a position of power in her administration, there is no doubt about that, said categorically, specifically, and without more than a moment's hesitation, when asked if the deaths of 500,000 Iraqi children was worth continuing the pressure, she answered, yes, I think it was.
Cleaning up America, one flying monkey at a time. It's Mike Malloy.
About 9 before the hour. Cindy McCain, that was the other part of the Michelle Obama story. And of course, even Hillary Clinton got in on that, too. Richard writes, Cindy McCain gave the 2008 election its first, quote, silver foot, end quote, moment, you know, foot in the mouth. It's absolutely amazing that a wealthy, lily-white, blue-eyed, blonde trophy bride has such a facile understanding of the black experience in America. I'm a 61-year-old, white, middle-class, independent voting male, and I know exactly what Michelle Obama meant. 145 years after emancipation, 43 years after the Civil Rights Act, a black man is not only running for president, but actually has a chance to become president. Michelle Obama was not criticizing America. She was praising America. Couldn't you see the emotion in her face, hear it in her voice? She was so proud she was almost in tears. At long last, black folk may finally have an actual, quote, seat at the table, end quote, not a euphemistic promise of things to come. This is Martin Luther King's dream come true. The only people on earth who cannot see this election as a sea change in American history have been living in a rich Republican bubble. The McCains do not get it. The Republican establishment does not get it. And rich, white, media wonks don't get it either. John McCain should leave his Barbie doll back in Stepford. Respectfully, Richard and his last name. Yeah, that was the other thing. And the reason Richard's email got my attention is because, again, as a white person, to go through, to listen to O'Reilly's comments today, that was on his radio program, to listen to O'Reilly's comment. We got a call from someone at Keith Olbermann's program and said that was okay. Well, whether that was true or not, it was on the radio program, I guess. But to listen to O'Reilly, a Caucasian, make that kind of a lynching statement, a threat against the life of the wife of a senator, for Christ's sake. And then to see Cindy McCain make her comment, another white person, and Hillary Clinton, who should know better about being proud of America. You know, why don't white people leave these comments alone? Because whites don't have a clue. Don't have a clue about the black experience and where that kind of a comment or statement from, in this instance, Michelle Obama, is coming from. Don't have a clue. and to criticize it for O'Reilly, especially O'Reilly. Forget for a moment the lynching part. For this pig son of a bitch to make a claim that Michelle Obama, if this is the first time she's felt proud of America, well, then proves again, endlessly, always, how whites don't have any understanding of black consciousness, political consciousness, social consciousness, cultural consciousness. Don't. White people were never slaves over here. White people, oh God, I'm not going to go through it. I really am not going to go through it. But you know when whites will finally get it? And I've said this before. It's when whites start tending to black folk. It's when whites take the bus from the middle of the city out to the suburbs to take care of old black people. And, you know, changing old black ladies' diapers and taking care of an old black man's dribbling his food down the front of his shirt the way black people have been taking care of white people for over 200 years in this country, 300, whatever the hell it is. And when white men and women, especially white women, I guess, because always black women had to go through this, when white women leave that rich black person's house in the suburbs and walks through the rain to the bus stop and stands there with the shopping bags and her nylons down around her slippers and a scarf around her head and a cotton cloth coat pulled up around her neck waiting for the bus so she can get home at 8 o'clock at night to take care of her children, then white people will understand the black experience. When enough white people have cleaned up enough black folks' vomit and wiped enough black folks' butt because the black people are senile and can't control their digestive systems any longer or whatever the hell, as black people have been doing for so many generations, then white folk will understand a little bit of the black experience. In the meanwhile, black people have been doing this for 250 years in this country. Let me tell you something, my white brethren and sistren. Don't ever fool yourself into thinking that black folk aren't on to you. Oh, my God. They know everything about you. Black folk know how you're born. They know how you live. They know how you die. They know how you smell. They know what you eat. They know what you throw away. They know everything about white folks. Everything. And you know what? We whites don't know a damn thing about black folk. Do you understand that? Can you get your mind around that? You people that always send me the emails about, well, Mike, things aren't so bad. You know, why are the Obamas complaining? Look, a black man has made it this far. Come on, get real. Get real. Don't run that kind of an email to me. Send that to somebody else. Now, I happen to be Caucasian, predominantly, because I am Italian, and that's kind of a qualifier. But I will tell you right now, I've had black friends all my life, and I do not understand the black experience. And my white brother, neither do you. And my white sister, neither do you. You may come close to it. You may reach out and poke at it with your finger, but you don't know it. So white people, shut up. Shut up when someone like Michelle Obama says what she said. Shut up. Sit down. Listen. Welcome back. It's about 7 past the hour. The Molloy Program on Nova M Radio. Well, we have it here from Associated Press. A missile launched from a Navy ship successfully struck a dying U.S. spy satellite passing 130 miles over the Pacific. It happened just after 10:30 p.m. Eastern Time, which would be about 35 minutes ago. Two officials said the missile was launched successfully. One official, who was close to the process, said it hit the target. He said details of the results were not immediately known. The tank aboard the spacecraft carried 1,000 pounds of toxic hydrazine, the fuel. U.S. officials have said the fuel would pose a potential health hazard to humans if it landed. Blah, 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 blah. Officials said it might take a day or longer to know for sure if the toxic fuel was blown up. Oh, really? Oh, well then. And isn't it just a, I don't know. Probably not. I was just going to say, isn't it a little bizarre that they pulled off this successful event during the eclipse of the moon? Nah, it doesn't mean anything. Do we have the Uncle Mike Story Corner music handy? I don't think we need it. I guess we'll hold off on this. We'll hold off on this. Let's do some phone calls. Gary is calling from Miami, listening on WINC. Hey, Gary. Hey, Gary. Okay, let's put Gary on hold, and we'll try someone else here. How about Stephen, who's calling from Burbank, California, listening on KTLK. Hey, Stephen.
How you doing, Mike?
I'm doing all right.
This O'Reilly clown, it's hard to nail where this guy's coming from. He's ragging against so-called secular progressives and defending the baby Jesus, which means he's supposed to be setting himself up as some kind of a good Christian. And, you know, I'm not proud of Vietnam, and I'm not proud of Korea, and El Allende, so forth and so on, ad infinitum.
Mm-hmm.
But in the Bible, which, you know, I've read it twice, our contemporary Tom Hartman has read it four times, there's something about blessed are the poor in spirit, you
mm-hmm.
know, because they've been ragged on too much, you know, the injustice, all the hatred, all the stuff that's happening.
Mm-hmm.
So with this O'Reilly, you know, it just seems that, you know, he didn't read his Bible.
Well, he's like a lot of contemporary Christians. They call him Cenos, Christian in name only.
Yeah, like rhinos.
Yeah, like rhinos.
And Cenos.
Yeah, they have no belief in Christianity at all. They use that because they know they claim Christianity. Because they know that puts them on in a good place with some of their brain dead listeners. But
like James from Phoenix. The other night, when you there's one thing that I read in the Bible that I understood completely, and that's when John the Baptist said, God is able from these stones to rise up children unto Abraham. And I can understand that completely because those stones will grind down into sand and dirt, and they'll take nutrients in the soil and the minerals, and the plant will grow, and the mother will eat the tomato or something and get nutrition, and voila, there you have it. We're stardust.
Yeah.
We're all stardust, you know. And they fail to realize that the truth is the truth.
That's very true, Stephen. There's not an atom inside you or me that hasn't been somewhere in the universe, in a starburst somewhere. Huh?
I am compelled after that last caller to revisit the orange man from Florida who was speaking so eloquently the other day about why we needed to teach creationism.
Oh, okay.
Because somewhere there's an orange out there related to your house pet.
Maybe have a household pet, or maybe some of the other board members, maybe a house. Thank you, sir. Before I begin, I'd like to know maybe if any of you maybe have a household pet, or maybe some of the other board members, maybe a household pet at home, or maybe somebody here. See, I brought these oranges down here with me. I was going to eat them, but after reading all the material I've read this last weekend, I've learned from some of the writings that, and I'm just convinced, I know beyond the shadow of a doubt, this orange right here is the first cousin of somebody's pet cat. And this orange here, I'm convinced, just because I've got a conviction, all I've learned within. Now, I know this orange here is no doubt the parent of somebody's pet dog.
Oh, man. Somebody put that guy out of his misery, really. The sad part is he doesn't realize that on an essential level, he's absolutely correct. He's mocking the truth. Sort of. Devron is calling from Seattle, listening on KPTK. Hey, Devron.
Hey, Mike. Wanted to talk and get your ideas about this Fidel Castro thing and basically America's viewpoint. You know, they're communist and we can't deal with communists. Well, we've had trades with China, the largest communist country, Lord knows how long. It's all about Big Brother America and making a symbol out of little Cuba and trying to, you know, make some statement, you know, that you thou shall not go against me or, you know, whatever godly status we're trying to uphold here. But I just think that's about time for a change. And that's really what's kept me solid with Obama and hearing him saying that he's willing to, you know, have open discussions and, you know, try to get this issue resolved 90 miles off the coast of Florida. I just think it's an utter shame.
Oh, it is. It is. And it has been for the better part of half a century, thanks to misguided policies by everybody from Eisenhower all the way up to Chuckle Nuts, George W. Bush. Thanks, Devron. Appreciate you checking in. Gary is calling from Seattle, listening on Sirius Satellite Radio. Gary, welcome to the program.
Hey, welcome, Mike. Hey, Mike, I wanted to start out by saying I really, really appreciate what you had spoken on. I'm African-American, and, you know, I want to thank you, you know, my wife, my children. We all want to thank you for what you just said because it was my mother that, you know, that used to ride the bus and go across town and have to take care of the elderly white people, you know.
Uh-huh.
And I really appreciate that what you had spoke on. And another thing I wanted to speak on that I've never heard is the Obama and Clinton. I hear Magic Johnson get up, and he was speaking on experience. And it shocked me because he was, you know, for Hillary, he was saying experience. And isn't he the same Magic Johnson that was a rookie that jumped in and took Kareem Abdul-Jabbar's position? And I thought that was double standard. And I'll take my comments off the air. Thank you.
Okay. As far as the Magic Johnson thing, I think you're right. As far as the comments I made, you know, about black folk and white people, from the earliest that I can remember, you know, I was brought up in a fully integrated situation. Not that there wasn't racism. Of course, there was racism. But and I had a newspaper route when I was starting when I was 8 years old. Actually, I sold them on the corner till I was 10. Then I had a newspaper out for about 4 years, and probably half of my customers, I had like 90 customers, probably half of them were black families, half were white families. And in running that paper route, you know, I got into black folks' houses to a far greater degree than you know, some white kid that didn't have a paper route with 45 or 50 black customers. Plus, I had an awful lot of black friends growing up. In elementary school and high school and so on and so forth. And just like that caller, some of my black friends, you know, we didn't invite them over for dinner because their parents wouldn't be home. There's no such thing as divorce in black families back then. But the father would be working, the mother would be working some job someplace, taking care of white people. So, you know, if my friend, I'm thinking of Bruce Mathis specifically, and if his mother or father weren't home, I'd say, come on over and have dinner in our house. And he used to tell me about that. We'll be back after the break. Stay with us.
disappointed, frankly, in the vote I got in the African-American community. I put people in my cabinet. I put people in my sub-cabinet.
21 past the hour. Yeah, when I was a paper boy and used to spend time inside black people's houses, and being the paper boy, I don't know, do they still have paper boys? We don't have any here, not in Atlanta, but at Christmas and Halloween, and I'd get little gifts, you know. Some of my customers would give me a dollar tip. Others would give me little baked goods or whatever. So, you know, I just had a chance, an opportunity as a kid growing up to really be exposed to black culture in a way that a lot of white people weren't. And just by accident, my father was as much of a white racist as any northern white male. My mother was not. Isn't that so often the case, huh? But when I found out that some of my little playmates had mothers who had to truck in on the, and like I said before, you know, I grew up in a lower working class neighborhood. Everybody worked, but you know, how much money did you make? And when these moms would be coming home at 6 o'clock at night, 6:30 at night, sometimes 7 o'clock, and up north in the winter, it's been dark for 3 hours, and they become trudging home, you know, like Bruce, I mentioned Bruce, he would have dinner at our house, and he lived right across the street, catty corner across the street, and he kept looking out the front window in our apartment. We lived in a 3-story walk-up, and he would look out the front window and see if the light was on, so he would know either his mother or his father would be home. Now, his father would work, you know, various shifts, maybe a second shift or something, wouldn't get home till 11 o'clock at night. So he'd watch to see that light go on in the living room, and when that light went on, he would know that his mother was home. And, you know, my mom worked. My mom was a waitress, but she didn't work. I mean, she didn't do it like that. You know, she worked as a waitress. It was still kind of a servant's job, but it was different from going into somebody's house and cleaning and wiping butts and noses and, you know, taking care of folks. So, I don't know, just through all that, in our neighborhood, we had a root lady. How many white people know what a root lady is? Let me see a show of hands. Okay, see, that's what I'm talking about. Very few white people know what a root lady is, but she was indispensable in the community back in the day. I didn't know what a root lady was until one day one of my black friends, Steve, said, I got to go by the root lady's house. And I said, what? I got to go by the root lady's house. I got to pick something up. My mother wants me to get something for my sister. A root lady. And when we got to the house, it was, I wouldn't say it's scary, but it was just a little bit. I wonder if any black people out there listening to the program right now going, root lady, damn, I haven't heard that. I haven't heard that term in a lifetime. But that's what it was like. See, that's what it was like. I think about the white people I know. And a lot of white folks never had a chance. They had that racism pumped into them from day one. They never had a chance. You know, I don't think people are born racist. My God, I've watched my children grow up when they were little, exposed to not just white culture or white society, but exposed to as much as I could expose them to. And they don't start out as racist. They really don't. Little white children don't start out as racist. You know, they start out just enjoying the hell out of other kids their age. They don't pay any attention to that. I look at Molly now. She'll be 4 in July. And when she's around Latino kids or black kids or white kids, they're kids. I mean, she doesn't. You know, they don't have that. And I think about how some white people never had a chance. Most white people never had a chance when they were kids. They didn't have a chance to try to understand the humanity of people. You know, got hung up on the hair texture, the skin color, or whatever. Jesus. It's really rough. So when Michelle Obama makes a comment about how she feels, for the first time in her adult life, really proud to be an American. God bless her for saying it. Bless her for saying it. Because she's talking from the kind of experience that Bill O'Reilly, O'Reilly obviously is just a racist punk, but you got to stop and wonder, at least I do, I wonder if three-year-old Bill O'Reilly would have said, well, that's what she said, let's get the lynching party going. I don't think so. I think back when Limbaugh or O'Reilly or the rest of these white people, when they were little children, I don't think they came out of their mother's wombs with a hood on going, where's the next KKK meeting? But that's how they were brought up. That's you know, that's how they were poisoned. And, you know, you can almost feel sorry for them until you realize that these are adults. And it doesn't make a damn bit of difference, you know, what was pumped into your head. At some point, it's your responsibility to pump it out. And if you can't pump it out, you know, there's that old saying, you where it concerns the tapes running in your head, whatever those tapes are about, you can't erase the tapes, but you can damn sure turn off the machine. So that's all I got to say about that for tonight. But when I hear white people commenting on something a black person says about, you know, how that black person feels or what he or she's experiencing, and the white person jumps in with some kind of a editorial on that, you know, again, I just want to say sit down and shut up, because you really don't know what you're talking about.
Got the flying monkey right blues? Here's the cure, Mike Malloy.
About 25 before the hour, Spitfire writes regarding the Proud of America comment by Michelle Obama. Spitfire writes, I just recently went into a tirade with my friends that the so-called American dream is not about buying a home and raising a family. Hell, you can do that on the French Riviera. Politicians keep saying that's the American dream, but for people around the world, the American dream is the concept that it doesn't matter who you are, no matter your color, your religion, your ethnicity, or your political beliefs, you are considered an equal under the law. This is the dream that Martin Luther King was talking about, but it hasn't been the reality in this country. Since I just had that discussion with my friends, I can relate as to why Michelle Obama can feel proud. Yeah, okay, all right, back to your phone calls here. Jake is calling from Eureka, California, listening on KGOE. Hey, Jake.
Hey, Mike, how's it going?
It's moving right along.
Well, I think, you know, that is what is going on with Barack Obama's presidential campaign. It is becoming a mass movement. It is a realization of Martin Luther King Jr.'s dream. And that is, unfortunately, going to be what is attacked by the right wing. And you see that with him going after Michelle Obama, for instance. I mean, her statement that in the first time in her adult life that she's really proud of her country. You know, as a person from Generation X myself, I was born in 1972 when Richard Nixon was president. And my entire life, just been one right-wing corrupt administration after another. And this is the first time in my life that I think I'm actually going to see a president in office, Barack Obama, hopefully, who will be a president who actually cares about the best interests of the American people instead of just whatever the special interests want that give that guy money. And if you look at Bush, Clinton, you know, these people are basically, whether they're Republican or Democrat, these politicians that have been entrenched in Washington, D.C. for decades, they're just doing whatever their financial contributors want. They're basically bought and paid for. Mm-hmm. And that includes Hillary, and that's why she's losing.
Well, I think Hillary epitomizes that. The question I have, and it's legit because, you know, I've been around through a number of elections. The question I have about Barack Obama's candidacy and his election, and it looks like that's what's going to happen to the presidency, is whether or not he is free of the constraints and the obligations put on presidential candidates, senatorial candidates, members of the Senate, members of the House, presidents by corporate America. When you look at his contributor statements, whatever the hell you call it, Kathy? When you look at those and you see that some of the contributions to his campaign have come from some questionable segments of corporate America, you know, it does raise the question. On the other hand, if some right winger wanted to put $1 million into the Nova M network, we would take it. Now the obvious caveat to that, we would take his or her money, but we would say you have absolutely nothing to do about the program, and then we'd stand, you know, the contract would state that. So I don't know. I'm hoping that Barack Obama will not prove that his rhetoric was not true. When you listen to him, the way we used to listen to Kennedy, and you hear this rhetoric that really does inspire you, and yet when you take a look at some of Kennedy's in his short period of time, talking about Jack Kennedy, in his short period, his 1,000 days, you see some things that go, wait a minute, was that a liberal? Was that a progressive? And then, of course, when Kennedy became dispensable, he was dispensed with. And I don't for a minute think that Lee Harvey Oswald put, you know, all those bullets in Kennedy and John Conley and so on and so forth. But so I hope Barack Obama, if he does become president, and I think he will at this point, I hope we don't find out that the rhetoric is just rhetoric. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, I agree. And I hope for the same thing. But if you look, for instance, at Hillary Clinton, you know, she was taking money from Rupert Murdoch, and then she was wanting to do all these debates on Fox, you know, News. So I think we understand that Hillary Clinton really wasn't a Democratic candidate. She was basically the Republican Party's choice for the Democratic Party.
It seems that way, or maybe not. You know, maybe we don't have to go that far, Jake. Maybe it's just that Hillary Clinton is part of the Democratic, an integral part of the Democratic Party establishment, the DLC, what we refer to as Republican Light, a corporate Democrat, a Democrat that's going to respond first and foremost, as Molly Ivins used to say, you've got to dance with them that brung you. And if a candidate, I don't care what the party is, if a candidate is supported, massively supported, Bill Clinton was, and now Hillary Clinton, by corporate America, you're going to respond to the people that paid your ticket, you know, that got you into the game to begin with. You're going to respond to them. That's why I say Hillary defines a corporate candidate. She might make a good president. I'm not saying that she certainly wouldn't be better than anything the Republicans can vomit up on the stage. Even though, you know, I've said before, I consider the Clintons to be Republican light. But, you know, I'm looking for change. I hate to use a cliche, that's a word that's becoming a cliche, but I am. I've had enough. I mean, I've been around long enough to see I've been fooled so many times. And I just hope, I hope against hope, that Barack Obama turns out to be the one elected official who's not going to fool me. You know what I'm saying?
I agree. Well, the one thing I do think that Barack Obama will change for sure is the foreign policy of this nation. You know, I do not think we're going to be stuck in Iraq for the next 100 years if we vote for Barack Obama. But if John McCain gets in, well, you know, we'll be there forever.
Or someplace else, because McCain is a warmonger. There's no question he's a warmonger. Not necessarily. You know, a lot of people have been in combat. The last thing they want is more war. But McCain, I don't think McCain's major Vietnam War experience was as a prisoner, not as a soldier, or in his case, a Navy flyer. It was as a prisoner. And McCain, to me, personifies what corporate America wants. They want free and open markets. They want to exploit labor. They want to control resources. You know, when you look at a company like ExxonMobil that had a $40 billion profit last year while most of us struggled to fill up our gas tanks, son of a bitch. And then you think of John McCain. McCain is going to do exactly what corporate America wants him to do. He's not a maverick. He's only a maverick insofar as the crazies, the real moonbats in the Republican Party, the religious nuts and people like Limbaugh and Hannity, and you know, to them he's a maverick. But to mainstream corporate America, he's their boy. And if he's not their boy, Hillary's their girl. It's so just so simple. All right, thanks, Jake.
Thanks, Mike.
All right, appreciate you checking in. Cam is calling from Phoenix, listening on KPHX. Hey, Cam.
Hey.
Hey.
Mike?
Yes?
Wow. Thank you. And next time you talk about the root lady, how about bringing up the cracklins?
The cracklins? Oh,
yeah.
My God, I love cracklins.
I remember
cracklins.
You talking about the cracklins.
Yeah, well, my grandmother used to make those. Oh, that's I haven't had that in 40 years.
Well, I'm trying to lighten it up a bit because, to tell you the truth, I am absolutely devastated in anticipating what the machine is going to try to do to Barack and Michelle Obama. And I really even hesitate to bring this up tonight, Mike, but Google Larry Sinclair and Barack Obama and see what comes up on your internet. It is absolutely heinous. I happen to be a Barack Obama supporter. I've worked hard on his campaign.
Are you talking about that piece of human waste?
Yes.
That said about the limo?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. I've seen it. Somebody sent that to me. Anyone who doesn't see exactly what that is out of their minds. I mean, anyone who thinks that there is even 1/1,000,000,000% truth to that. But you're right. That's the kind of stuff they're going to put out there.
It's going to be worse than anything that we've seen because, frankly, in my opinion, Barack Obama is a candidate that we've never seen in the last... I'm 42. I've never seen anything like this man. And they are going to tear him to shreds, and I'm really scared about it because we are on the verge of actually doing something great for once, and I'm just asking everybody to try to get to the truth in that whole situation. Mm-hmm. If people Google that, they are going to be probably just as offended as I was, and I hope Bill O'Reilly is fired. I'm a white girl. But I am so offended by that lynching comment. That struck me to my soul, and I'm white.
Well, no, I understand. It does me too. You don't have to live in the South to feel the tremors that kind of language sends through you. But the fact is, I have lived in the South for about 40 years, well, a little more than about 45 years.
Well, you know what that means.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. You know, I remember Emmett Till's death, and you know, I was in where was I? I guess I was in high school, maybe elementary school. But I remember Emmett Till's death, and you don't talk like that. You can't say that. If you have any decency in you whatsoever, well, Bill O'Reilly does not. He is an absolute pig. Cam, thanks. Got to leave it there. We'll be back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. Before the hour, thanks to the crew, Ian Huff, Billy Foster, Ben Birch, Chris in Minnesota, Bob Alexander, Bridget Wolf, Catherine Bay, for the program tonight. You all know who you are, and you know the damage you've done to America's airwaves by seeing that this program is on another night. And don't forget, Phoenix Area Truth Seekers, Scott Ritter and I will be... in Phoenix for an event planned and executed, you'll pardon the word, by Nova M Radio and 1480 KPHX. So go to the website, 1480kphx.com. There might be a few tickets left. If there are, grab one, because it's going to be an interesting night this Saturday. And I think the gig I'm talking about starts around 6. Back to your phone calls. Todd is calling from Coconut Grove, Florida, listening to WINZ. Hey, Todd.
Yes, Mike. I get the feeling you haven't spent much time in South Florida. Is that the case?
Not a whole lot. No, I haven't.
Yeah. Well, as a nearly 70-year-old Anglo who's been here since the early 60s, I feel very qualified to tell you about the Republican Miami Cubans,
mm-hmm.
you know, those who fled here when Fidel went after them,
mm-hmm.
and about their heirs that have perpetuated their hollow cry.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have a minute, I'll just give you a couple of points.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I got a minute. Go ahead.
Okay. First of all, the three most important things in Miami are greed, corruption, and Fidel Castro. And parenthetically, it's been recently reported that Miami-Dade County had more money stolen from Medicare and Medicaid than 44 other states combined, not counties, states combined.
Good Lord. I'm sure Jeb Bush had something to do with that.
Well, and I've concluded, Mike, that if they ran Cuba the way they run this city, there's no wonder there was a revolution.
Mm-hmm.
Just yesterday, the city attorney was registered as a thief after having a plea deal with the state attorney. Now, he's leaving office with $250,000 severance package and 6 months of free health care.
Oh, God.
Can you believe it? And the taxpayers, of course, are going to pay for that.
Right.
Now, just a couple more here. Now, I want to make one thing abundantly clear. There are many decent and honorable Cubans here, but they have to be very, very careful of what they say and to whom they say it.
Mm-hmm.
Because if the vocal Republican Cubans don't agree with them, they will attack them en masse in every conceivable way. So the bottom line is you talk about self-centered, selfish, arrogant, greedy, haughty, corrupt, two-faced, gutless hypocrites. And unless you live here, Mike,
mm-hmm.
you would not believe what goes on in this community. I'll leave it at that.
All right. Thanks, Todd.
I hope you found that informative.
I did indeed. Yeah, I've heard other people say basically the same thing. There is an element in South Florida, in the Miami-Dade area, that this I can't understand. I really cannot understand this. Had the United States backed Castro's revolution against a dictator, against a tyrant, and of course, that's ridiculous for me to say that because the CIA was operating out of Havana during the Batista regime, keeping watch over and destabilizing all sorts of governments in Central and South America back in the 50s. Remember, it was the battle Cold War, but the U.S. government is what drove Castro to seek an ally with the Soviets. How many times did we try to kill him? How many times did we try to overthrow his government? Kennedy inherited the Eisenhower plan of the Bay of Pigs invasion. Kennedy could have stopped it after he found out that the CIA had lied to him about the invasion. He fired Alan Dulles, who was the head of the CIA, I believe, at the time. But it was too late then. Kennedy got his payback because he was executed. So the Cuban Revolution was a legitimate revolution against a murderous dictator that had pretty much turned the country into a playground for mafia types, for CIA types, for the kind of corruption that corporate America, even back in the 40s and 50s, was so fond of forcing down the throats of countries like Cuba. And when Castro defeated Batista, the Cuban people were overjoyed. But what they needed was a hand up. They needed some help. And that's the reason Castro came to the United Nations, came to New York, and he was honest, big mistake, declared himself to be an agrarian reformer, which was code for communist. And if there's one thing that we just couldn't and still can't tolerate in this country is still a slur right up there, just right behind the N-word, and that is to call somebody a communist, which is madness. It's just insane. It's absolutely mad. Just crazy. Crazy beyond belief. So Castro, who was a legitimate revolutionary, who led a legitimate rebellion against the kind of crime and corruption and filth that far surpassed anything that the revolutionaries in this country faced back in the 18th century. And the response by the United States was to turn our backs on him, to do worse than turn our backs. We didn't turn our backs and leave him alone. We turned our backs and embargoed his entire country and forced as many other nations as we could force to do the same. I'll have more on this tomorrow night. Uncle Mike's Story Corner is about this tomorrow night. And Friday, who's subbing for me Friday? Sam? Sam Cedar? No? Who?
Johnny Wendell.
Johnny Wendell, that's right, from KTLK. He'll be subbing for me Friday because that's a travel day. I'll see you tomorrow night. Take care, okay? Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio.